The Economic Development, Housing and Budget Division for Wednesday, March 17th will come to order. Happy St. Patrick's Day for anybody who's interested. And we have a quorum. Okay, a quorum is present. Who's first? Senator Saltzman, Senate File 2832. Welcome back.
And it's a pleasure to be here, Mr. Chair. I am here with the with Senate File 2832, which is a home warranty bill. And I know that this has had a couple different stops already, and I believe it's here because of some fees, and I believe there also may be an amendment for the bill. But just to give you a little background on this bill, there was extensive work done last session on homeowner warranty bills, and several of those were vetoed. But one of the things that did come out of that was a real commitment on the Department of Labor and Industry to convene a working group over the interim to look at not just the attorney fees portion, but what are we doing about being more proactive in terms of dealing with warranty issues and bringing people to the table to be able to have a process to deal with disputes, to deal with problems up front so we can resolve them before it gets to the stage of needing litigation. And Mr. Durenberger is here from the department, and he was responsible for convening this group, which involved homeowners, it involved builders, attorneys who have represented both builders and homeowners, the insurance industry, and they came out with a report. And this legislation is a result of that report and really goes into a process so that, again, we can be much more upfront, proactive in dealing with problems before they become an issue. The reason I'm here, I believe, is because there is a fee structure in there regarding the dispute resolution process, and the department has worked on those fees so that it is a self-funded program, I understand. And perhaps Mr. Durenberger can address that particular issue or other questions that you have about the process.
Mr. Durenberger, welcome to the committee. Are you related to the senator?
Yes, I'm his son.
Oh.
One of them.
Pretty good looking son, too, isn't he? go ahead. Why don't you tell us what you know?
Mr. Chairman, specifically about the fee provision?
Mm-hmm. Maybe for the purpose of the committee, maybe you want to give us a little bit of a quick summary of the report also.
All right. Well, first of all, the group that we put together was at the request of the governor in his veto message on the homeowner warranty bill, or the bill that would have allowed homeowners to recover attorney's fees. He wanted us to get a group of interested parties together to explore alternatives to litigation. And so last fall, I put together a group, as Senator Saltzman has indicated, of builders and homeowners, representatives of the insurance industry. And we met on a monthly basis, and we accelerated our meetings as we got closer to the session to try to achieve consensus on some areas that could result in legislation this year. And the report that I put together that led to the drafting of this bill included three main areas of consensus, basically around the notice of an opportunity to repair that basically compelled the homeowner and the builder to go through a process where the homeowner puts the builder on notice that they have a defect in their home and then requires the builder to acknowledge the notice and conduct an inspection and then make an offer to repair, would then enable the homeowner to make a decision on how they want to handle the situation from there. We also wanted to establish or work towards clear building performance standards to make it clear for both builders and homeowners what expectations are realistic for a home's performance in the different warranty periods, and we thought that that would go a long way towards eliminating litigation and protracted disagreements between builders and homeowners. And then we also wanted to establish some form of alternative dispute resolution to try to sidetrack some of these disputes before they actually get to litigation and running up the attorney's fees that are so challenging for homeowners and builders as well. And what we came up with in that regard is an early neutral evaluation is what we're calling the process and the department has a role to play in that, in evaluating individuals who wish to serve as a neutral. And so we have a fee that we're proposing for individuals who would like to become approved as a neutral. And then we have a very modest fee that we would charge to the parties when they request this early neutral evaluation process, which is required before the homeowner can actually file a lawsuit based on a breach of the 327A warranty. So our goal was to simply recover the costs of administering the approval process for the neutrals and the costs of organizing and identifying the neutrals that would be assigned to each individual homeowner builder case that would be presented to us. It was a challenge because we honestly have no idea how many individuals there might be that would be interested in serving as a neutral, nor do we know exactly how many cases we would have in a given year. So I believe we lowballed it, thinking that it's not a lot of heavy lifting for the department in either one of the components of it, but we think that it's a good place to start.
So this is basically in response to a problem that exists when there's a warranty violation or the homeowner believes that there's something under warranty but the contractor refuses to repair it, and this is the process for getting to some resolution. Is that what we're looking at here? Senator Saltzman?
Well, perhaps, Mr. Chair, yes. It also, there is a process in place that when a homeowner determines that there is a problem, that there are certain steps you go through, and everyone agrees to those steps. So, you know, perhaps the problem can be, taken care of by just making sure that, you know, the builder has the opportunity to repair, that we go through that process.
And how does the homeowner know about this process?
It will need to be part of, when they buy a home, part of the home warranty process, being able to, they will get a copy of this when they buy the home so that they know how it works. So it'll be part of when they buy their home and part of the home warranty that they get right now.
If they read it.
So there's a process.
Mm-hmm. If they read it.
If they read it.
Okay. All right. One of those. Okay. You have some kind of an amendment? And the fee is $250, and it's for arbitration. Is that what I'm looking at here? Dispute resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the $200, there should be a $200 fee.
I believe I need section 9.
On page 4, it says $250. Do we want it to be $200?
Well, I know in the House version it's $200. What we wanted to do is have a $200 fee for the neutrals who are applying to be approved as a neutral, and then a $50 fee for the parties to apply to go through the early neutral evaluation process. And that $50 fee would be split by the parties but paid to the neutral.
So do we need something changed in the language here to reflect that, or Senator Saltzman?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we could change on line 4.26. We could change that to $200 because that was changed in the House this morning in their committee. And if we want to be consistent with the House language.
Do you want to be?
I think, Mr. Dernberg, is that okay with the department to change it to $200?
Mr. Chairman, that would be our preference.
Okay. Senator Sparks will move on line 4.26 to change $250 to $200. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Now, do we want to put a $50 fee in somewhere else?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we would. In fact, in the authors delete all amendment in the House version, there is language that specifically talks about it's a $25 fee. It's referenced that would be paid by each party to the neutral, who would then remit the pooled $50 to the department.
Do we need a whole bunch of different language than what we have here?
I don't know that it would be a whole lot of language, but we would need some different language to reflect that.
Senator Saltzman, do you want to leave it the way it is and go to conference or accept the House version when it comes over, or what would you like to do?
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, because this will have to go to the full Finance Committee at some point, if we could amend it there when we have the exact language, would that be something that we could consider?
That works for me as long as it works for the committee. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Salzman. Just so I understand how this is going to work, there's a $200 fee that's going to the department basically to pay for supporting the administrative process that they'll be doing there. Or no, that's the fee for applying to be on the list.
Right.
Okay. And then there's going to be a fee that'll be paid by the parties. Is that to the department for their work? Because I'm assuming that you're not going to get a qualified neutral to do this work for $50. So there's going to be an additional charge, whatever they charge to be to the parties to do the work. That's contemplated, I think, in 5.18. It says they can't do more than 6 hours worth of work and they share the billing. Doesn't look like it sets any limit on, you know, what would be charged. So I suppose it would be the going rate for, you know, what a neutral would charge. So I'm not sure what the chair was talking about. If there's something where the department's also getting paid fee.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Durenberger.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the $50, the $200 fee would be specifically to cover the cost to the department of evaluating the individuals who wish to be certified as a neutral to participate in the program. Then there's the separate $50 fee that would be split by the parties that would be paid to the neutral, who would then remit that fee to the department, and that would cover our costs in keeping the list of the neutrals and then providing the three names to each of the parties that request the early neutral evaluation. The neutrals themselves would bill for their time separately to the parties, independent of any interaction with the department. And there's a cap of 6 hours of time that the neutral can bill, although it can be extended by the mutual consent of the parties. There was a concern on the part of the homeowners that we try to compress this process as much as possible, and that's why we came to that six-hour limit. There was a concern that it might, if there wasn't a cap, it could be allowed to stretch out longer, and that would delay a homeowner eventually seeking a remedy in court.
Okay, Senator Saltzman, if you don't mind, we can include this in the omnibus policy bill, and we can if you can get the amendment to us before
yes.
we pass the omnibus policy bill out of here, we can fix it still in this committee.
Very good, Mr. Chair, and I believe that Senator Kelash may have an amendment.
Senator Kelash.
Mr. Chair, I have the A4 amendment.
A4 amendment. Senator Kelash.
And I talked to Senator Saltzman prior to this, and she's okay with the language.
And does what?
It adds a sentence to the exclusions part of it so that the vendee or owner establishes the vendors and the home had actual notice of the loss or damages. So it's not, I don't believe it's in writing, but they have to have some kind of proof. It's the way it's presented.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. On this amendment, Mr. Chair, this was actually a separate bill that went through the legislature last year. It was part of the home warranty bills, and it has to do with the fact that there were some concerns on homeowners regarding how they had given notice to, you know, the contractor. And so this was, again, a provision that was passed last year. And we wanted to bring it back because it really, I think, gave some additional comfort to the homeowners. We're really trying to find consensus on this bill, working with, you know, both the industry. I know that the contractors have, you know, agreed to this, and so we'd like to include in the bill, again, because I think it really strengthens this bill as being a consumer protection, but also it addresses the needs of our builders as well.
Senator Olson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that the reason that this is a good addition to the bill is because the concern the contractor is usually going to have is that people don't sit on a loss for a long period of time and it gets worse without them knowing about it or having a chance to correct it. And so the requirement is that they be given the written notice so that they know something about it. But a lot of owners aren't really that astute to know that they're supposed to give the notice in writing. And so if the contractor already knows about it, his interests are served without having somebody be left holding the bag simply because they didn't know that they should have given this written notification. So I think this is a good addition.
Does anybody need to comment or feel the need to comment on this amendment? Okay. If none, any more questions or comments from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
In terms of this staying as part of the the omnibus bill, I would like to keep the option open to have it move separately as well, because I think that's how it's moving in the House. But I understand that you're trying to keep all of your fees in one bill. So if I could just keep that option open, that would be helpful.
We can accommodate you.
Thank you.
But for now, we'll keep it here, okay?
Yes.
All right. Okay, and Senator Kielash moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion adopted. Okay, then Senator Kielash will move Senate File 2832 as amended. You recommend it'll be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. Any further discussion? Any other comments, Senator?
I'm done, I think, okay. Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further comments, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted.
Thank you very much, committee.
Thank you. Senator Scheid, we have some. Wait, what do we have here? We're going to clean up the. Oh, is that yours?
I don't know which one he's going to take. Just we'll see which one. Mr. Chairman, which
we do first?
Bill do you want?
Senate File 2643, Senator Scheid.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is called the SAFE Act. The acronym stands for Secure and Fair Enforcement for Mortgage Licensing Act. And actually, it's obviously SAFE stands for more words than it has letters, but that's what it's about. It's a response to a federal act called the SAFE Act that was passed 2 years ago, and it mandates that states participate in a national licensing system for people who engage in residential mortgage loan originations. So we do have some fairly strong consumer protection laws in place, and this is going to take us in a slightly different direction when it comes to mortgage licensing. Currently, we license companies, not the individuals, so that we license companies and we require that they oversee the conduct of their employees. We require them to do background checks on loan officers. We prohibit participation by individuals who are convicted of financial crimes, and we require companies to monitor compliance with loan officer education requirements. SAFE Act, the federal act, requires fingerprinting, background checks, and licensing of the individuals rather than, as we do, the companies who are engaged in residential mortgage lending. So there is a fiscal consequence that I'm going to maybe let Mr. Murphy describe that, but we are here trying to conform to a federal mandate. And maybe I will let Mr. Murphy tell you, because I worked with the department to get this language in front of you, and then you can understand the fee, perhaps.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Murphy from the Commerce Department. There's several fiscal consequences to this bill. One is that we have to pay our fair share of the development costs of this national mortgage licensing system, which is approximately $400,000. So we propose to conduct an assessment on the mortgage industry to pay for that. So that will be done later this year, as we propose. As far as the human beings that would have to get licensed, they would pay an initial licensing fee of $100 to go through this process. We estimate that there might be 3,000 human beings that would get licensed. The license would be good for 1 year. The renewal would be $50 1 year later. We expect that in year one, we'd have to have 4 additional people to make this work. So the revenue from the new licensees would pretty much offset the costs of the people to administer this program. The costs would fall off in subsequent years after we've got this system up and running.
So the $400,000 that we have in our bill is generated by the license fee, or is it a general fund appropriation that then replaced by the license fee.
Mr. Chairman, that would be an appropriation to the department, and we would assess the industry to repay that.
And that's what the two fees are, the 100 and the 50. The 50 is a renewal fee. The 100 is an initial fee.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the 100, there's two different things going on, and the $400,000 doesn't actually show up anywhere in the bill. There's a provision that lets us do an assessment. So we have to buy our way into this national licensing system. We know that that will cost about $400,000, so we're going to do an assessment on the industry to raise that $400,000. And then when we deal with the human beings, it would be $100 for a human being to get licensed on this national system. That would generate about $300,000 in the first year, and that's that would be approximately covering our cost to put together this program.
Maybe I'm not clear on my question. In our budget balancing bill that we passed out of here, we have the $400,000 appropriation in the bill for the department. And so once you assess the industry, then the Commerce Department will pay back the general fund?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. That's what I want to know. So this is federal conformity, basically speaking.
Mr. Chairman, I think so. I don't think we'd be going in this direction at this time, unless it were for, the federal.
And do we do anything in here that the feds don't want us to do?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. This is pretty much of a model law, and we're tracking very close to the.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions from the committee? Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had a meeting earlier today with a representative of Habitat for Humanity who's concerned about this provision capturing them. How do we respond to that concern?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's true. Mr. Murphy, can you respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, currently the department exempts nonprofit entities from having to be licensed. We've done that for several years now. The SAFE Act doesn't give us much wiggle room, but I know, and we're very sympathetic with the nonprofits, but the SAFE Act is pretty much a pretty narrow track without a lot of wiggle room in it. We know that a lot of the nonprofits are making comment to the Department of Housing and Urban Development in Washington, which has rulemaking authority to flesh out some of the details on this. So I believe that that's more of a national issue than a Minnesota issue, and we're a little reluctant to go too far off the reservation here, but we do understand there is a bit of a problem there, but we're hoping it'll be resolved by the HUD rulemaking process.
They were clear that this is more of a federal problem than a state problem, but we're hoping that whatever bill we do adopt, at least if they do resolve their problems federally, that whatever bill we do adopt doesn't continue to ensnare them in some regs that shouldn't necessarily be applied to them, because it would really harm their ability to deliver this housing.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, and I think we've been ahead of other states in this area in any case, and I think you hear that the department has, been very willing to accommodate that, and I think that that would be the goal going forward, but we do need, Mr. Murphy's right, we need to let HUD process work out. I assume there is pressure from many, many areas on that.
So thanks, and thank you, Senator Scheid. So just to be clear, then, should the federal problem be solved, nothing in this bill then would continue to cause Habitat loan originators to be subject to this statute?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Mr. Murphy how that, do we need maybe some language about that? To look at something that may happen, or would the department be able to deal with?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, Senator Dibble, I believe that if people in Washington decide to exempt the nonprofits, that we'll figure out some way to accommodate them.
That's a promise for a future action, Mr. Chair. Do we trust, or do we trust but verify?
We got you on record now, so. Okay. Of course, he put it on the feds, as you noticed.
Well, you know, I acknowledge that, but, I want to be sure that, and I think that problem is going to be solved federally, so I don't want us to create a continuing problem should we solve that problem at the federal level.
Okay.
Fairly confident, so I'm just worried that this language of this statute will continue to ensnare, trip up Habitat and their ability to do their work in Minnesota. There's going to be some lag time because we're not in session, around the clock, around the calendar.
Senator Shai, did you want to comment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not adverse to there being some kind of language that would deal with that. I don't think you want to do it here off the top of our heads, but I think this bill is, you're going to be laying this over to be included in your omnibus bill. And so, I think we ought to carry on the conversation. I think the department is completely trustworthy on this. I know that would be their direction, but that they would want to move. But I also understand Senator Dibble's, wanting something in black and white.
Senator Dibble, you can work with Senator Scheid, but we're gonna move an omnibus bill out of here on the 29th, and so or prior to that, I don't know. And
I put it on the record, Mr. Chair. I'll work with Senator Scheid to maybe create some contingency language.
You can fix it up then.
All right, thank you.
And Senator Olson, do you still have a comment?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to suggest the same thing, that we could put some contingency language in there that would address that issue. So,
okay. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, okay. I wait. Pleasure here.
Then Senator Dibble will move that Senate file 2643 be laid over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Scheid. Senator Scheid, you got one more.
Mr. Chairman, I do, and I think it's a bill that was here the other day, and Senator Koch had an amendment, but it wasn't in amendment form, and we talked about my coming back here today to do that. It has to do with small employer health coverage, and I, defer. It's Senate File 1905, I think, yes. I think that.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Scheid, then I've got the A5 amendment. I'm not sure if members have that in their packets yet. Yeah. Passing it around. So this is just as we discussed, Senator Scheid and members. This is turns this into a small group market working group, and so they can take a look. You see there's a wide array of members here with a good list of duties for them to come back and report to us on. And my understanding is also this is language that was agreed to last year and just didn't quite make it all the way. So we'd like to move this issue forward, and I think this is a good, cautious, but moving the issue forward nonetheless.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Chairman, you will recall that this had to do with increasing the small employer groups from where we right now are up to 50 employees. And originally last year I wanted to take that to 100. I was coming back for 75. And I've been fairly convinced that we need to talk about it before we do it. I still submit that it's the appropriate thing to do.
Were you fairly convinced or unfairly convinced?
The answer is yes.
I was kind of.
It's in there. Yes, it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. I have to think about that. I was very convinced. But I think we do need. Well, I was very convinced because he took it out of the bill last year. That was convincing. So, yes, Mr. Chairman. So this doesn't increase any number there. It says we're going to talk about it and see how we might best do this, because we don't want to have a negative effect, meaning higher premiums on the smaller groups, and have those kind of impacts that, unintended consequences, obviously, if you will. So okay. I strongly support what Senator Koch is suggesting.
And we're going to send this one out of here on its own. So, so Senator Koch moves the A5 amendment to the 1905 bill. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. And then, so Senator Koch moves that Senate File 1905 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Ortman wanted to wait till last, didn't she?
Oh, I'll put her in Senator Vandeveer's.
Was that a yes?
Decide.
Huh? Senator Ortman, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, it's very nice to be back. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you all. I appreciate your hearing this bill, Senator Tomasoni. It's Senate File 3170. I'm grateful to the members of this committee to coming out to my district last year. Many of you traveled out to Mayer in New Germany, Norwood Young America, and Hamburg to see what's happening out on the west side of my district. In 2006, then Commissioner of the Department of Economic Development, Matt Kramer, came out for the same purpose of doing some economic development, seeing what could be done to assist these communities with the challenges they face given economic decline. Unfortunately, things haven't changed for those cities since you were there a year ago, and the economy hasn't gotten better for anyone, honestly. But I'd like to just point out a few facts. I know that you've been given some information about each of these cities, and I'd like to just point out a few things so all members are aware of it. Not all of you were able to join us. Carver County is the smallest of the seven-county metro area with a population of about 88,000 people. But it is a quarter, 25% rural, and I think most people think I represent a very suburban district. I represent Chanhassen and Chaska and Victoria, but beyond that are these smaller, very rural cities that look an awful lot like cities all over the state outside the metropolitan area. The annual total cost of living in Carver County is 23% greater than in greater Minnesota. We have higher property taxes. We are one of the seven-county metro areas. We do have greater burdens for infrastructure and other needs. Our cost of living in Carver County is slightly higher than the rest of the metropolitan region as well. There is a map on the sheet that says Carver County, and if you look, you'll see the city of Eden Prairie is cut off there, the name for it. That's where Chanhassen is. That's where I live. Chaska is to the south, right along the river. And Victoria is to the west of Chanhassen. And then you'll see Waconia, a thriving city, and Watertown is doing well. The cities that we're talking about now are Mayer, which is right on County Road 25, New Germany, which is right near Mayer. We're talking about Norwood Young America, which combined several years ago. They consolidated into one city for savings. And also the city of Hamburg, which is down just off of both the Sibley and McLeod borders. The city of Norwood Young America is 3,626 people. Since I have served in the Senate, Norwood Young America has lost two major employers, Schwann's to Tino's and the Oak Grove Dairy. That was devastating for that small community. The city still faces competition from the neighboring communities in Sibley and McLeod County through Job Z. They have talked to businesses that have actually told them that they would not locate to Norwood Young America because the Job Z credits were available just across the border a couple of miles away. The poverty rates, just to point out, in the city of Norwood Young America for ages of citizens 65 to 74 is three times the state average. There's a letter in your packet from the city administrator from Norwood Young America. He notes, again, the loss of the 250 jobs for a community of a size of 3,600 and what that has meant to them. All they're asking for is a level playing field to compete, but that city, like the others we're talking about today, have been leapfrogged in terms of economic development. Going on to the city of Mayer, 1,840 people, 25% of the city's budget comes from local government aid. If you ask the citizens in their quality of life study from 2008, the top issue was taxes. That was 20 respondents said that was their highest issue. The ones that were looking for more business in their community were 12. The city of New Germany is 350 people. 35% of their budget comes from local government aid. The average home value is $155,000. The state average is $213,000. In New Germany, 14.4% of residents have income below the poverty level, compared to 7.9% for the state of Minnesota. And those that were of you that were with me on the tour, we saw quite a bit of empty homes. There was boarded up businesses. There's not a lot, unfortunately, going on in the city of New Germany. The city of Hamburg, I'll be brief about that city as well, but it has been a major focus for me over the last few years. The city of Hamburg has 560 residents. Under the federal drinking water standards for radium and arsenic, they were required to build a new water treatment plant, and they did that with new wells at a cost of $1.2 million. This is a city of 560 people, not 560 homes. They built that with bonding dollars, $1.2 million. Since then, they've learned that they need to do inflow and infiltration improvements, and they need to do stormwater improvements, sewer and stormwater improvements. They're going to cost $400,000 for one and $600,000 for the other, and they don't have the tax base to spread that across the citizens of the community. In fact, between the development of the treatment system and where they're at today, the MPCA actually told them that there was a moratorium on permits, hookups, in that time because of the quality of the water. So they actually had a business that they wanted to locate, that was ready to locate in their city, and they were turned away because the MPCA said that they would not allow a permit. We've since worked through that issue. They're holding on the moratorium for now. As long as they're trying to work through these issues, they won't deny them a permit, but they have to ask permission on a case-by-case basis. So now they're faced with these bills of another $400,000 and $600,000 to meet the quality standards, and they don't have the finances to pay for it. I've had meetings with them, with the MPCA and with the DNR, to say, are there any funds available to help this city build what they need and move on with this? Unfortunately, we haven't found any. I've asked if maybe they could opt in to a higher standard where there's a bigger pool of funds available. And so they're considering that. But this city needs some help. Honestly, all of these cities deserve and merit your consideration. The bill that you have before you would allow them to participate in the statewide grant program for infrastructure. Right now, because they're metropolitan cities and metropolitan counties, they are ineligible for any of those grants. As I said, the city of Hamburg is looking for a $400,000 or a $600,000 matching grant where they would pay for half, and the grant funds might be available for half. And so, Mr. Chair and members, we're hoping that you will look at 3170 as an opportunity to help them address the needs. Right now, they are not being met by the state of Minnesota. I hope that you'll help me with that by carving out an exception and allowing these small cities within a few miles of the border of a metropolitan county with a very small population to participate in that grant application process.
Senator Ortman, have you looked into the PFA? Have they applied at the PFA? Have any of these cities applied at the PFA? Mr. Coleman, why don't you come up here and tell me what's going on?
Mr. Chair, they have.
Committee members, we have loans with every one of those communities for infrastructure. In the last decade, they've been doing a lot of upgrades. Hamburg is one of those that was forced to upgrade their drinking water system because of the contaminants there ranked real high. They did qualify for some grant dollars to write that cost down. Now they're faced with a sewer moratorium, and I know been to city council meetings. I don't normally go to those too often, but we had kind of a town meeting. Their water rates for a family of five, I know we had several people testify about their water rates, pushing $200 a month. I know the one individual said when his water bill comes, they don't go to the grocery store that week, and he's put his kids on a one shower per week limit because he just can't afford the $200 a month. At that time, they were on a building moratorium, which has been kind of modified a little bit. It's still on a partial, I believe, moratorium. But there hasn't been a lot of growth in Humburg for, I don't know, 50-plus years. So it's about as rural as you get. It's real high cost. Their infrastructure is fairly old, needs to be upgraded. They've been trying to upgrade that, but the costs are just becoming overwhelming. They're ranked at such a point, initially we thought we were going to be able to provide them a 50% grant with the TMDL grant program, and then because they were listed on that as having a total maximum daily load requirement and restriction on it. And PCA came to the meeting, I think, said the project was eligible. And then the engineer that originally stated that decided it wasn't eligible. So they're kind of stuck. I mean, they can't afford a loan. They don't rank high enough on the list right now for the limited grant funds we have. But it is a very high-cost project. I'll also make a comment on the bill expanding that. Talking with the people at DEED, and I also under contract with DEED to manage these programs, no problem with expanding in there. Actually, we proposed legislation, and the governor recommended in his bonding bill to expand that program to include it statewide and fund it at $25 million level. That bill, we kind of turned over to the chairs of the Capital Investment Committee, and I think they've negotiated
$10 million.
Trying to work on it to come up with something next session. But barring that, there's still a need statewide for business infrastructure in all 87 counties.
So that's the best you could do? You can't find any money for them?
Pardon?
Aren't you issuing $400 million in bonds? You can't find any money for them?
We are, and we can afford. We've got plenty of money to lend them. It's a matter of what's practical as far as expecting residents to repay the loan. Right now, Humburg's in a difficult situation. Some of the residents can. Those as families and fairly large water bills, you know, you double that existing water bill to cover the expansion of the sewer system is going to be a little hard.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, doesn't this language, wouldn't this include rural Hennepin, Scott, Dakota counties, basically areas surrounding the whole metro area in some form or another? And I'm just wondering where all the money is going to come from to handle even the basics of just your county, Senator, of Carver County, to tell you the truth. So I'm not sure what the multiplier effect of this would be beyond what we've just been presented as far as Carver County, but maybe you could give us some idea what other counties are in the same or areas are in the same kind of situation.
Wait, Barry, don't go. Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chair, one of the things that you can't do is carve out an exception just for one city or for three cities in Carver County or four, if you might like. And so we had to make the language fair to all for the application process. I'm not aware of many others. I've not seen any. I asked Senator Roebling if she was aware. She said no. Senator Saltzman doesn't have cities similarly situated. So I'm not sure how many there are, but I haven't seen any coming forward to say we support your bill, love it, we need you to pass this. I haven't seen that either.
Senator Kielash?
Well, I just would like to I'm sorry, I didn't remember your name.
Mrs. Coleman.
Terry Coleman?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, Executive Director of Public
Facilities. While you're thinking about responding to his question, we got a bill in here that where we expanded your bonding capacity, I think, to a billion. Is that what we did? Or you want us to, at least.
Yes, Mr. Yeah. Chair, that is the credit enhancement program for county and municipal bonds that issue bonds on their own outside of our programs.
And one of the things that you didn't want to do was do any refinancing if possible.
Correct. We eliminated refinancing debt because that is a contingent liability on the state's bond rating.
Because,
we want to
if you've got loans with these people and they're already paying too much and you get and they need more. This might be a really good opportunity to refinance some loans and lower their rates a little bit on their payback. I don't know, this might be one of the places where we might want to take a look at making an exception. So you might want to work with Mr. Coleman on this one, Senator Ortman, but go ahead and answer Senator Kielash's question.
It's just about how many other counties are in the same boat with cities that Senator Ortman represents.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, I'm really haven't looked at the map. I was just going to come here and listen to the testimony. I know the cities because we have loans with all four of those communities. And I've been to some of the city council meetings because of the unique situation. Hennepin County, western Hennepin County is very rural. Southern Dakota County is very rural. But I don't know what communities are within a four-mile radius of the border.
Mr. Chair, just to follow, I guess part of my question is there a lot of other cities in these other counties that are have the same financial concerns that we're talking about with these?
Oh, Madam Chair, Senator, no, I'm not aware of any. We only actually have a handful of cities that are in pretty rough financial shape because of the high cost and lack of growth.
Okay, thank you.
Humburg is obviously one of them.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, it's the city of Hamburg, and no offense is taken. One of the things I would just let you know is that I didn't point out that you have a letter from the city clerk treasurer of Hamburg supporting this bill. Of course, he couldn't be here today because he is the only city employee and he does everything. So actually, he couldn't leave for the committee hearing today.
He's
very grateful.
No money.
He's very grateful.
Is there anybody else who'd like to testify for or against
this
the bill?
Is your name.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is J.D. Burton. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC does have concerns with this legislation. As you're aware, this would be carving out an exception in the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program, which was created by Greater Minnesota Cities in 2003 to help address some of the specific inequities that Greater Minnesota Cities face, particularly distance from the metropolitan area, lower population centers, and lower tax bases, a number of which Senator Ortman has referenced for her cities as well. Unfortunately, this program has received far fewer resources than is necessary to meet the demand in Greater Minnesota. Just for example, in 2008, which was the last year that there was GO bonds appropriated outside of the bonding bill, which just passed, about $5 million came back to the program after earmarks were taken out. That money was out the door in 3 to 4 months, which meant that so effectively the rest of the 2 years before more money was appropriated, the program was shut down. That left dozens of cities unable to take advantage of this grant, which they otherwise would have been able to do. This year, there is about $8.5 million in the bonding bill. That's after you take out the earmarks that were in it. Again, the demand we saw was between $15 and $20 million, and that's just for cities. If you take into account the fact that this grant was expanded last year to not only include Greater Minnesota cities but also counties, the totality of that means that in all likelihood this money is going to be going out the door very, very quickly, even if there was not the addition of Senator Ortman's legislation added onto that. So our concern is that this grant was created for these cities. This grant has been very successful for these cities. We're not quite sure, as Senator Kielash has mentioned, how many more cities would actually qualify for this and how much money they would be asking for. But with that being said, I do want to recognize the challenges that are facing Senator Ortman's communities. We do understand that that is a very difficult situation that she's facing in her communities as well. We would encourage DEED to look at alternative ways to provide some resources for these communities. But the legislation itself, we have some concerns with, and we think that it should be staying focused on Greater Minnesota.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the Coalition for Greater Minnesota Cities would support restoring their redevelopment fund, which was originally created to serve metropolitan redevelopment, economic development needs, and for a number of years was diverted just to Greater Minnesota purposes. Now it's a pot that we equally share in, but it's a similar sort of situation here.
It might be a better pot of money for Senator Ortman's issue.
Maybe we can dedicate it solely to the metro area like it was originally created.
I don't know. That's a possibility, I suppose.
Right. For Senator Metzen, he's been keeping a pretty close eye on that situation, too.
Go ahead. I think that was a question to you, actually.
Certainly, the redevelopment account with the split, I think that we have 50-50, the CGMC for the last 3 or 4 years has been supportive of that split. We have not challenged that split at all. Obviously, there are a number of grants that are provided through the Met Council and through other ways that our cities can't qualify for, but I do understand Senator Dibble's position, and we think the 50-50 split is fine. But with the efforts that were made this year to merge these two programs together and expand it, we just think that now is not the right time to try carving out exceptions for it.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, it just kind of reinforces the idea that there's not enough revenue to go around in this state for infrastructure that we need. And without more revenue, it's hard to solve problems that are serious and need to be addressed soon. So
it's pretty interesting. It's in both Democrat and Republican districts, mm-hmm. too, isn't it? But you have a witness, Senator Hartman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but if I could just comment back about the greater Minnesota cities. The cities that I represent don't want to take anything away from any other community. That's not why we're here. We're here to point out some of the concerns that we have and the fact that we are falling into the gap between these programs. And asking for this exception, I think, and adding them in makes some sense. We're not asking you to divert the grant program funds or to award them. We're asking to allow us to apply for them. That's all we're asking for. And to make our case for those funds, we know they're not going to get queued up in the next year or so, but in the future, we'd like to be able to participate. Maybe there will be more funding when we have some changes. Hopefully, we will have some changes and more funds will be opened up, and they would like to be part of that process. I do have the city manager from the city of Mayer who was able to make it today. It's a longer drive than most of us realize. She's Luann Murphy, the city administrator.
Welcome.
Thank
please
you.
State your name for the record, please.
Certainly. My name is Luann Murphy. Chair Tomasani, if that's correct or not, and Economic Development Tomasoni.
So you're here on St. Patty's Day? Is Murphy your real name? Or?
No. I can't claim it. I'm not Irish. I'm German and Welsh.
Okay, all right.
Sorry.
Okay,
I was married to an Irishman.
We won't get into that.
Okay.
Okay, all right.
Members of the, my name, like Senator Ortman said, is Luann Murphy, and I'm the city administrator for the city of Mayer. And I was in front of you last fall, I believe it was, testifying about some of the issues in Mayer. The city of Mayer is a small city in western Carver County, which was incorporated in 1886. We're a growing community, and our current population is 1915. And we are on the fringe of the metropolitan district. One of the things that I think needs to take into consideration with Senator Ortman's bill is that the city of Mayer and the surrounding communities have many of the same characteristics of the cities that are able and eligible to apply for these grant funds. We have a failing infrastructure, and we have an older housing stock. So we meet the characteristics of it, but we are penalized because we're in the metropolitan area, although we don't get all of the benefits of the metropolitan area. So we have a limited amount of tax base, like I said, and the ability to compete with the communities that are just across the border that get Job Z besides. We can't get that tax base in there ourselves to be able to grow. And then we're forced with the state mandates, the improvements to the water plants and the improvements to the wastewater plants. We face those mandates from the state. The city of Mayer currently with our Class A wastewater plant had to do improvements for the phosphorus testing, and I'm sure that when our NPDES permit, the last one was just approved, now we have to do a mercury minimization plan and we have to test for mercury. All those are costs to our residents that I'm not sure how we come back to get those when the housing market is the way it is and when we're a small western community that fits the characteristics of many of the outstate communities. I would respectfully request the support for this bill, and I will stand for any questions.
You know, we had a problem like this up on the Iron Range about 30 years ago. The little town of Kinney couldn't get any funds for its wastewater treatment plants, and They knew that whenever the United States went to war with somebody and they would win the war, they would always rebuild that city's, that country's infrastructure for them. And so Kinney, in one resolution, declared war on the United States. They seceded from the Union also. And then they surrendered. All in one resolution. And sure enough, the money showed up. It was unbelievable. I don't know. Maybe that's a solution for you here. But.
Do you have a copy of that resolution?
Yes, I do. And I now have a Kinney passport also.
In and out.
Senator Koch.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, thanks for bringing this. What we did see when we visited your area is you really do have a tale of two districts, and these outside areas really do more resemble Greater Minnesota than Chanhassen or Chaska do. So, thanks for bringing the bill. Do we need to add an amendment, Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch. I did prepare one for consideration by the committee. It would be to decide what the distance should be from that external border. Should it be 4 miles? Should it be 10 miles? I don't have the answer to that. I leave that to the committee. It was drafted at 4, and I think that covers everybody.
Except for mayor.
And so
we're 6.
6 miles from the border. So I don't know whether that adds in anybody else.
Well, you tell us what you want to do, and we'll put this on the bill. I'm not saying I'm going to support the bill, but I'll put this on the bill. Okay.
Look, could I get you at 4? Or no, I didn't.
What do you mean by get you?
I'm hopeful that Senator Koch might make the motion to amend it to 6.
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, this is your first committee, so you can amend it any way you want. So, yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I would ask that an author's amendment be added to change the mileage to 6 miles instead of 4.
Are you sure it's 6 now? It's not 7?
We measured it.
Okay, all right.
So moved, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
So the A1 amendment, we don't even need the A1 amendment. We'll go to the bill. On line 1.18, change the word 4 to 6.
6.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted. Any further discussion or comments? Okay, as you can tell, this is controversial, okay? And I'm not inclined to support it because of the fact that these are dedicated funds to outstate Minnesota, and I'm very sympathetic to your cause. And so I want to work with you some way, somehow, to figure out how we do this. And I don't know if Mr. Coleman's got some answers back there, but we may be able to expand his bonding capacity to figure out a way to do some of this stuff so it works out better. And maybe there's some other funds indeed that we can actually do this with. I'm not sure yet. And Senator Dibble actually brought up one that might be a possibility.
Chair, Koch, Greater Minnesota doesn't use all those funds.
Well,
those
that's
funds that they have their hands
yeah,
in.
Yeah, that does come back. Yeah, exactly. And so you would definitely qualify for those. But Senator Koch, you wanted to say something.
Sure. Well, I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, then there seems like there's some possibilities that have come to light here. Is it possible to lay the bill over for possible inclusion?
Well, we'll lay the bill over for possible redressing if you can come up with something. And then that way we don't have to just say, no, we're not going to do this, or yes, we're going to do it. But you can understand the dilemma that we have also with this particular fund. And so if there's no further discussion on the committee, Senator Koch can move that we lay this bill over. And Senator Ortman, you can possibly work with us or with Mr. Coleman on some other legislation that we do have in here that might work. And I'm not sure if Deed's got a better idea either. So maybe there's a way to do this some way, somehow. Because we do need to get some grant money to some of these places that can't pay for the infrastructure themselves. So with that, Senator Koch moves to lay the bill over. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your consideration. Appreciate it.
Senator Vanderveer.
The third fund is the
Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. Chair, where would you like the
Senate File 3043.
What would the motion be to...
keep this or let it go? What motion do you want to make?
Well, we'd like it to go to the floor and move it to the floor and keep it here for possible inclusion.
Keep it here first, and then I think what we'll probably do is... go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, we have a couple bills that may be moving in two places at once, and so for the time being, I think we're going to keep them here, and then at some point next week when we process, we may move a couple bills out on their own in addition to what is in the omnibus
bill. Why don't you describe the bill first, and then we'll figure that out.
Okay. Mr. Chair, what this bill does, and members, is it licenses the appraisal management companies that have come into play as a new participants in the real estate valuation industry. And here to explain in more detail the bill is Wendy Walker, who can just kind of give you the need for the bill. And then we do have an amendment, though, I think we should do before we start, and that would be the A-10-2393.
Where do they get these numbers? Yeah. And this is a delete all, so you want to substitute this for your whole bill, right?
It is, Mr. Chair, but it's substantially the same as, you know, what we did in Commerce, but it's actually the House language with what the House passed out of Commerce yesterday with four changes.
And is there objection or agreement or to this, or what's the situation?
We believe there is agreement to it. I don't know of any objection to it. But if we can adopt the amendment and then have the discussion.
Since this isn't your first committee with this, I just want to know if there's anybody that has any objections to this amendment.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Timothy O'Brien. I represent the appraisal management companies.
What's going on here?
And thank you for the allowance to come back to St. Paul on this happy day. We have no objections as appraisal management companies through our trade organization to the bill.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks.
Can you maybe point out, I know we heard this bill in Commerce, but could you show us some of the changes maybe that were made in the House? Do you know any amendment?
I think Ms. Walker can.
Ms. Walker, please say your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Wendy Walker. I'm currently serving as the president of the North Star chapter of the Appraisal Institute. I also own a small independent appraisal company called Walker Appraisals. The primary reason for the difference between the bill that was originally heard in the Commerce Committee and this new bill is that the one heard from the Commerce Committee, they did not have time to go through the revisor's office and get all the definitions in that were worked out with Department of Commerce staff. So that is the fundamental wording change. There have been a few substantive changes in addition that are new to this bill. One is that there is language addressing fee disclosure of fee splits between what the appraiser gets and what the AMC gets. I don't remember what. Okay, this is at the top of section of page 6. Says that an AMC shall state to the client the fees paid to the appraiser and the fees charged by the appraisal management company, and that an appraiser may disclose the fee paid to the appraiser in the report. So this is, you know, related to honest disclosure of fees consistent with the goals of RESPA. Another change which was introduced in an amendment in the House is at the back, it talks about the Real Estate Appraisal Advisory Board to the Department of Commerce. This was originally an amendment offered by Representative Junkie. It changes the board from 15 members to 9 members. Commerce is aware of this change, and they agree that 9 members are adequate to serve the purposes of the board. I'm also a board member of that advisory board. And so those are the two most substantive changes that are in here. Most of it is definitions and clarity.
Mark.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Vanderveer.
There is one other change probably of interest to this committee, and that's on the fees. On the fees for the Commerce Department for the actual licensing of the appraisal management company, and that would be on page 7. And this amendment I just blanked, they had, and that would be line
727.
Yeah, 727.
You want an amount in there?
Yes. And I think we've agreed on with the Commerce Department, and we're going to have a conversation about this before we finally do it, but the first number would be $1,500, and that would be on line 727.
You don't have the new bill.
Mr. Chairman, 727.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You got 5,000 in the original bill.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Which was reduced in the House to 2,000 and 1,000. 2,000 initially and 1,000. And we've talked to Commerce. We're going to, we'd like to do is 1,500 initially and $1,000 on renewal. And
so you want to incorporate that into the delete all amendment?
Yes, we'd like to.
Does everybody see where that is? 1,500 on line 727 and on line 729, 1,000. So I'll just write that in there, and that'll be part of the amendment when we make the motion. What else should we know?
There was, I believe we covered it all, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. In Tax Committee, we had a very long conversation about assessors serving as appraisers, particularly in the counties where they're employed as assessors. So I know this is coming from a different direction, but do we deal with that matter in here at all, or do we need to?
Senator Manager.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, this doesn't deal with that at all. It's dealing with appraisal management companies, and this is a mortgage industry deal. It doesn't deal with assessing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, in the revisions, one of the items we did make was an exemption both for assessing appraisers as well as MnDOT and Minnesota agencies as well. So that was one of the substantial changes we've made since the original bill. So those were addressed at the request of those agencies.
Sorry, can you restate that?
Certainly. We have incorporated certain exemptions, and those exemptions are actually listed in Section 7, so bottom of page 6. And we have added both lines 7.17 and 7.18, which would exempt any government agency performing appraisals on behalf of government agencies, including tax, valorem tax appraisals. Okay. So this bill, although assessors could be by definition construed to do appraisal management services, they would be exempted from this, as well as agencies procuring appraisals such as MnDOT or other government agencies.
Thank you.
And Mr. O'Brien, or I don't know if Senator Vanderveer, everyone knows the answer to this, is the, since you're in here because of the fees, is the $5,000 fee that has been reduced to $1,500, does that have an effect on the ability to actually perform what the fee is designed to pay for?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think what the fee is intended to be reflective of the Commerce Department's actual costs. And they can maybe speak to it if they'd like, but
you're not Irish too, are you?
No.
Okay, all right.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Peterson with the Department of Commerce. The fees are to basically handle any kind of the administrative of the licensing, as well as we've also incorporated some enforcement that may be needed. So it was our best case of what we feel would be for the administrative licensing as well as possible enforcement.
So you're comfortable with the 1500?
Yeah, in the House version, we're going to take a look at that to make sure that the 1500 covers, but we believe it will.
Okay. All right. Any comments or questions from anybody on the committee? All right. Then Senator Vanderveer moves the A-10 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion adopted. And then Senator Vanderveer moves that Senate File 3043 as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. Any further discussion? Harlan.
Mr. Chair and committee, I was wondering, this Article 2 that's been added in the House version, it's changing the composition of this board, and I'm wondering if it needs to now go to state and local.
Vander, what do you think of that?
I think, Mr. Chair, that the changing of the board members, is that what would send it?
Yes. I mean, Mr. Chair, we're changing the amounts and then kind of just saying who can, what categories, where they have to be from, when the meetings can be called. No, just some different. It's just changing the mechanisms of this board.
Senator Vandiver.
I think, Mr. Chair, that when Senator Scheid was here with us, a bill that did something like that, there was some certification. So, if since you're holding it here, that you know that you, with regard to those boards, I meant, does anybody, do maybe staff recalls what that was?
You,
Mr. Chair, are we talking about one of the bills that Senator Scheid had?
Mr. Chair, the bill didn't. The bill wasn't about that, but it came up that there is a way to request from the local government committee as to whether the bill would have to go with what's in it. If we could just maybe keep it here, and then I'll talk to Senator Rest and show it to her, or you could, or
Ms. Walker.
I would like to say that in terms of the composition of the board members, the categories of members that are being deleted from the board are public members. And I've served on this board for 2 years, close to 3 years now, and we found that often the public members do not understand the issues and they do not attend the board meetings. And we also deleted the category of trainee appraisers. A trainee appraiser should not be serving on a board. You want more experienced people serving on the board.
We're not concerned about that. We're just concerned about committee jurisdiction here, and there's a possibility that as a result of the change that you're making in this article, that it may have to go to a different committee, which has a committee deadline on this Friday, I think. And what I'm thinking, Senator Vandiver, is what you might want to think about doing is deleting Article 2 from the bill right now, and from the delete all amendment. Since it's in the House bill, it may show up again in a conference committee or in a side-by-side comparison. Cap?
Could I have just 1 second to...
Mr. Chair and members, I think if we left Article 2 in the bill for right now and when we lay it over the table, we can contact the Senator Rest Committee and check it over with her. And if there's a problem with it, then we could, at that point, remove Article 2 from the bill as it moves forward, if it's in the House language.
Senator Vandiver.
Mr. Chair, I think your suggestion might be better, and that's to delete Article 2 because of the deadline issue, we may not, you know, I think we'd rather not deal with that right now, if the committee agrees.
Okay. Then Senator Vandiver moves to delete Article 2. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. So we will now, Senator Vandiver will now move to Senate File 3443 as amended to be laid on the table to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Okay, thank you very much. Tomorrow, Cap?
Mr. Chair, tomorrow we have an evening meeting where we are going out to Senator Kelash's district to look at some economic development around the airport. And then we will also be meeting on Monday to process some more bills and probably potentially begin processing the policy omnibus bill.
Senator Kelash, you have an announcement about tomorrow night?
Yes. At the request of the chair, I am providing.
At the suggestion. At,
oh, excuse me. At the suggestion of the chair, I am ordering pizzas from Fat Lorenzo's and local good quality pizza that'll be there for us, and some other refreshments.
So there will be food and drink.
And there will be there. Some of the folks that are presenting will also have tables around for more in-depth looks at their projects, which some of them are very interesting, and they are moving forward much faster than I thought. So at the Fort Snelling sites.
Okay, good work, committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And meeting adjourned.